Chapter 7. Don't take it personally. They're not out to get you. But it's not what I am saying that is hurting you. It is that you have wounds that I touch by what I have said. Don Miguel Ruiz, The Four Agreements. He's just trying to get me. He's so good at manipulating. He just wants my attention, and he's going for anything he can get. Sound familiar? Sometimes we think that our children do nothing but plot our downfall so they can get the upper hand and run the family. Rarely is this assumption true. We take our children's behavior personally when we feel exposed and vulnerable. Anytime we take anything personally, it means it's hitting a sore spot. We don't like that spot being hit, so our focus remains on us and what our child is doing to us. We don't want to be disrespected. We don't want to be manipulated or put down. We want peace and quiet. We don't want our agenda inconvenienced. From this vantage point, we are incapable of reaching across the gap to focus on their problem or their pain, to be helpful. We're too busy defending ourselves, upholding our standards, and protecting our beliefs. Anna, Jeff, and Sarah. Anna and Jeff are at the end of their rope. We can't take it any longer. We feel hopeless. We can't live like this. We're even talking about sending Sarah away, they reported in class one night. It's amazing how much power a child can hold over a family, and a very nice family at that. This is not a 16-year-old rebellious runaway. Sarah is 6. She ruins our day. We wake up in the morning and don't do or say anything, and she starts. Sarah's temperament has been difficult for her parents to handle from the beginning. She's extremely persistent, aggressive, and willful. Her parents' reactions intended to temper Sarah's behavior have been met with stronger and stronger persistence. They have tried punishments of all kinds and have even reverted to hitting a few times, shocking themselves in the process. It does nothing to quiet her, to cause her to understand that she needs to back down and cooperate so she might get approval and kindness from us. Anna and Jeff are understandably frustrated, and they worry about Sarah's influence on her 1-year-old brother, Daniel. She's rude, demanding, and has an attitude with a capital A. She is bossy and extremely daring in her behavior. Why does she do this to us? Anna sat in class distraught. I actually had her pinned to the floor this morning after she screamed stupid at me and told me to get out of here. She runs the family, she said. We never know what's coming next. After I got her off to school today, I went out in my car and just screamed and cried and said life shouldn't be like this. No, it shouldn't. No one should live under the tyranny of a 6-year-old. Sarah is very successful in school. She receives accolades from her teacher, who says that she's reading at a 4th-grade level and patiently teaches other children how to sound out words. Anna thinks that the teacher has her daughter confused with another child. This told me that Sarah is strong, capable, and on track still, but has learned many unhealthy manipulative skills that she maneuvers at home. If left unchecked, Sarah could become that rebellious 16-year-old runaway. The next week, Anna told the class a revealing story. I carried Daniel into the living room to nurse. Sarah was already in there playing by herself under a blanket. When we walked in, she stuck her head out, saw us, and sneered, "Get your stinking butt out of here!" Well, I saw red and screamed at her, "You get upstairs to your room this instant, young lady!" Many not-so-pleasant things were said before Sarah started upstairs, came back down for more screaming, and finally went upstairs to stay. Later, Anna was upstairs sweeping up bits of wallpaper they had scraped off the walls in preparation for painting. Sarah found a metal spatula on the table and began scraping more wallpaper above the floor where I had just cleaned and started singing, "I'm making more work for Mommy." I demanded that she stop. She walked over to the stairs and began scratching the wooden banister with the spatula. Then a strange thing happened, Anna continued. I felt myself move into this calm, detached place. It was like I didn't care, but I did. I knew that my anger would only provoke more from Sarah. It was a no-win situation. I knew I was either going to lose control entirely or I was going to walk away. I walked away and went downstairs. I got out a rag and a bottle of scratch remover, walked back upstairs, and handed it to Sarah, calmly saying, "You need to fix the scratch marks in the post." She took the rag and did just that. When Anna detached from her emotions, she became objective. From this new perspective, she had a choice. The choice to walk away often feels weak and powerless to a parent bound on maintaining authority. But when faced with walking away or losing the battle, walking away definitely holds the power. And Sarah knew it. There are two agendas. When Sarah screamed at her mother, "Get your stinking butt out of here," Anna's agenda became loaded as her button got pushed. Her expectations of her daughter's behavior, her emotional rage, her fears of what would lie ahead for a child like this, her assumptions of how she had failed as a mother all went into her demand, "You get upstairs to your room this instant." Anna hit zone 4 on the button meter. Her assumptions undermined her intention of teaching her daughter not to speak rudely. All Anna could see was Sarah's behavior. Sarah's agenda was ignored, and so she turned parent deaf. The gap was wide. The message was lost. The battle ensued. Across the gap, Sarah undoubtedly heard, "You are so bad, you never please me. Daniel is my good child. You never do anything right." Sarah's defense was to scream back at her mother to uphold what little integrity she had left and resist the command to go upstairs until she didn't want to fight anymore. But as soon as energy returned, she took the next opportunity to retaliate by scraping wallpaper onto the clean floor, scratching the banister, and taunting her mother. But when Anna walked away, she changed her focus from taking it personally back to her intention of teaching. As long as Sarah heard rebuke, she defended herself and fought back. When the blame was gone, she had no need to defend herself. She knew her behavior was wrong, and perhaps she was asking to be stopped. The clear direction, "You need to fix the scratch marks in the post," could be heard and acted on. There was no reason not to. Unfortunately, this was an isolated incident, and Anna was not yet able to transfer her learning to other situations. The battles continued. "She's out to get me." "Sarah is your teacher," I said to Anna. The expression on Anna's face showed us that she thought I had lost my mind. I suggested that each time Sarah sent her to the brink, she ask herself, "What am I supposed to learn from this? What is Sarah trying to teach me?" I asked Anna if she could pinpoint the instant assumption she made when she walked into the room with Daniel and Sarah erupted. Anna said without hesitation, "She's a rotten kid and she's out to get me. Plus, she's going to end up in really big trouble someday." "What do you think she's out to get?" Anna first looked confused by my question. Then she said, "She's out to get me mad." "What good does that do her? How does it serve her to get you mad?" "Sarah is like a knife. She cuts me." The class was quiet. "She takes my power away. She knows what happens to me. She is so manipulative." Anna was so sure that Sarah calculated her every move. She was caught in taking it personally. "I wonder why she wants to take your power away," I said. "Because she knows when she defeats me like that, she gets the power. Do you think she enjoys feeling more powerful than you?" When Anna answered with a definitive yes, I offered that children don't feel very good when they know they have more power than their parents. When they fear their parents are not in control, they think they have to take control. It's actually a very scary place for most children to be. I asked the class if anyone had an idea about why Sarah would be after her mother's defeat. "Maybe," she thought, "if her mother was vulnerable, something might happen," offered another mother. "What do you think Sarah thought might happen?" I asked. "I don't know. If Sarah really is her teacher, like you say, Maybe she's hoping that if she goes for the jugular, Anna will break down and change in some way. Maybe Sarah thinks that Anna will listen to her if she goes at her hard enough. Maybe she hasn't gotten what she's needed, and she thinks she has to get meaner in order to get Anna to pay attention. I looked at Anna to see her reaction. She was thinking hard. I don't know what more she wants from me, Anna said dejectedly. She has sucked me dry. She's gotten everything there is, and there's nothing left. What more can she want? What if she isn't intending to suck you dry, I asked. What if you're misunderstanding her agenda? If you assume that she's out to get you, to suck you dry in order to get power, and she's intending something quite different, then there is a huge gap between you. You both have loaded agendas. What could you do to narrow the gap? I don't know. Be aware that what I think about her isn't necessarily true? That sounds like a great place to start, I said as others in the group smiled their support. But we knew it would not be easy. Anna had a lot of sore spots that needed protecting. Anna's haunting past. When I asked Anna who Sarah reminded her of, she said, throwing her head back with emphasis, "Oh, my sister! She's ditzy and whiny, complains all the time, and is always in crisis, just like Sarah. When Sarah was born, she was very colicky, and my mother said right from the beginning, 'She's just like your sister.'" Anna's parents immigrated from South America. They were resentful of Anna's American ways, ease with English, and desire to learn. She was reprimanded for reading and struggled to get herself to college against her parents' wishes. She has always believed, "I'm never good enough, I can't do anything right." Her mother was physically abusive to both Anna and her older sister, but her sister got the brunt of it, while Anna retreated into her books and got only disapproving looks. As abuse often leads to a dependent relationship, Anna's sister and mother have formed a tight bond and live down the street from one another. They have always been in collusion in their criticism of Sarah and of Anna's lack of discipline. After Anna and Jeff moved from her hometown and her parents and sister moved to Florida, Anna felt alone and depressed. She began emotionally distancing from Sarah and buying into her mother's and sister's cutting remarks about her. She needed the alliance of her family now. Putting it all together, if I get close to Sarah, I have to separate from my family. I get approval from my mother for dealing with Sarah the same way she dealt with me and my sister, she said with perception. If I take Sarah's side, my mother is filled with disdain and disapproval. Anna strived for her mother's approval at great risk to her daughter's self-esteem. When Sarah behaved inappropriately, Anna's agenda became loaded with ideas of what her mother and sister would think, and fears emerged about her own dependency on their approval. She was very aware that an alliance with Sarah meant a break with the familiar relationships of her past. Sarah was losing out. In order to defend her choice, Anna had to blame Sarah. But Anna's choice was vulnerable, to say the least, and Sarah was fighting back. She was demanding that her mother see to her needs. She was trying to break down her mother's defenses. But Anna was too focused on her own insecure position to be able to understand Sarah's behavior. Being focused on herself, she saw Sarah's defiance as out to get her rather than as a cry for help. So she decided that Sarah's behavior was manipulative, and her assumption demanded that Sarah be controlled and punished. Sarah as the teacher. If Anna is willing to let her daughter's behavior reveal the wounds connected with her past, she will be better able to see how her standards have more to do with her past than with Sarah. By caring for Sarah in the way she herself longed to be cared for, not by compensating for her past, but by understanding Sarah's individual needs, they can both grow and connect. By giving what she did not get, she will give to herself as well as to Sarah. Sarah has taught her how. How to do it. When Anna entered the room where Sarah was hiding, Anna's reaction was understandably punitive and blaming. If she had done what Sarah demanded and left the room, she would have rewarded Sarah's rude, disrespectful comment. Either way, Sarah's need, the hurt and anger at the root of her inappropriate behavior, is unattended. Anna loses her authority, and Sarah learns that she needs to be louder and more demanding next time in order to be heard. Sarah doesn't understand that she's acting out because of her need for acceptance and unconditional love. She doesn't know how to say to her mother, "You aren't understanding what I really need," except with her behavior. And she doesn't have the adaptable temperament necessary to acquiesce to her mother's demands and behave cooperatively. If she did, her needs, still unattended, would fester deep inside to cause problems later on. If Anna can clear her personal agenda and reach across the gap to see her daughter's need for acceptance, her message can be sent as intended. If Anna had heard the hurt below Sarah's words, been able to refrain from taking her words personally, and detached from her catastrophizing fears of their future, she might have been able to teach Sarah an important lesson. The key is to change her personal focus from, "Why do you have to do this to me?" to a more objective, "You're having a problem. How can I help?" "I didn't know you were in here playing. I see that you'd like to be left alone. Would you please ask me respectfully what it is you want to say?" This response would let Sarah know that her reaction is unacceptable, but that her wish for privacy is heard and respected. She would be held accountable for her behavior immediately, rather than having her needs ignored and be let off the hook with banishment to her room. If Sarah continues with rude remarks, Anna needs to address Sarah's emotional state. "You're sounding so angry with me. I won't allow you to talk to me that way, but you can tell me what's going on, why you're feeling so mad." This might motivate Sarah to say more. Even very young children are capable of expressing themselves if they trust they will be heard and not judged. If Sarah can't, Anna needs to do some guesswork based on past experience. "I wonder if you're feeling angry because I spend so much time with Daniel. It must seem like you never get to do what you want without Daniel being in the way." What you guess your child is thinking is probably accurate. Many parents fear putting words in their child's mouth, but your child will be delighted to tell you if you're wrong. And your conversation can start from there. Statements like these are far more likely to open the door to communication than judgments, criticisms, or questions. Even if Daniel is screaming to be nursed, Anna could communicate in the same way while accommodating the nursing and inviting Sarah in. If that still doesn't work, waiting until after the nursing, when Anna is calmer, would be far better than reacting in the moment. Sending Sarah to her room is much easier, but affords no learning other than developing plans for future retaliation. The only reason a child wants to get you is to draw attention to something she wants or needs that is not getting attended to, and the only way she knows how to do it is by pushing your button. When your reaction to her behavior is even more punitive, she thinks her behavior must get stronger next time. But her intention is to serve her need, not to make you nuts. When you address her need, pushing your button is no longer necessary. Neither punishment nor permissiveness gets the result the parent intends. The gap engulfs communication, and more often than not, the child is left with the belief, "I'm not doing this right. I'm trying, but it's not working." When we take our child's behavior personally, we focus on ourselves and our needs, ignoring our child's. Easier said than done. Anna had become addicted to her patterns of behavior, debilitating as they were. But she was beginning to see the need to change. Anna has many excuses that can keep her stuck. "That'll never work with a child like Sarah. You just don't understand how bad it gets." It's about time she learned to wise up and be nice to us. She's not going to get a free ride in life. It's hard to take our focus off what our child is doing wrong to look at what we are contributing to the problem. Like Anna, we all have many excuses not to change. The next chapter will show you why.